The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me today are certified financial planners Cole Hammack and Cameron Utley. Today we're talking about using trusts within your financial plan. And this is something that we do every day as a company, comprehensive fee-only financial planning, so not just one focus on one thing. And estate planning is really critical. A really critical component to the financial planning process. So I want to get into sort of helping people understand. This came up actually in my family. We had a discussion about trusts, and nobody talks about it. You really don't hear people explaining it. And we're not attorneys, of course, but this is an everyday part of our workload. So I want to help people understand what's out there. What you know, the tools. What are they for? How can they incorporate them into their financial plan?
I just want to add real quick. I love this because, like, right alongside insurances, estate planning probably has to be one of the most neglected pieces of an estate plan.
It's so intricate.
Probably the most important piece.
Yeah.
But I mean,
exactly.
I was an adult, full-fledged adult, when I started working for this company, and I had what I thought was, you know, all of my T's crossed and I's dotted, until I realized what a universe this is and how varied. It can be, if you are not very specific and detailed in the way you approach things, you can really lose your shirt.
It's very much a you don't know what you don't know, and most people don't even know what all the pieces mean or how you even go about getting them. So
right, this exactly. Is well, that's what we're going to do today. So let me first remind people we're not attorneys. I have to say that. But we deal with these documents every day, as I mentioned. So starting with the introduction to trusts and their importance in financial planning, let's just kind of, I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole because we have lots of bullet points to go through, but let's tell people first, what is a trust?
You want to take it, Cameron? You're the new CFP. Yeah. Don't look at me. You got this.
That's a...
Newer. I'm old now.
Yeah. Once you hit 30, right?
Please stop.
Yeah, so a trust, on a very basic level, is not too awfully different than a will. If you think of what a will does, it takes pretty much everything you own and disperses it out the way you ask it to. To who, how much, which accounts to, neglect, what accounts to, you know, what jewelry to give to so-and-so. You can really... The trust goes to an extra step, though, of adding a level of control, whether that's to protect yourself from your estate plan or your will, you know, or estate being public, or to protect your kids from themselves or from others. There are some extra protections, and trusts in particularly that go a step further than a traditional will.
So it's a document within the estate plan that is similar but not the same as the will.
Works
with the will.
Yeah, to Cameron's point, the control aspect is key. So what I've heard is if you don't trust, consider a trust. Like if you have minor children kind of thing or some family members you want to provide for but maybe want to have some handcuffs before they can actually receive funds or certain requirements for them to benefit from it, then having a trust in place is what's going to make that happen. So you can get really creative with these in terms of the requirements, there's handcuff aspect of it. So it's a very neat document.
Before we get into how they're kind of different from other financial documents, let's talk about what some of the other examples of financial instruments are, like maybe an annuity or...
There's a whole universe. We would just want to keep to estate planning? So if we want to keep to estate planning, there's kind of the big four, I would say, outside of the trust here. So there's your last will and testament. That's the one that everyone's really heard about, right? That's the who does what, the who gets what, and if you have kids, who takes care of them? So who's the executor, who's the beneficiary, and who's the guardian? You have the power of attorneys. There's one for finances. That's who can make financial decisions on your behalf if you can't. The healthcare power of attorney, so who can make medical decisions on your behalf if you can't. And then the living will is the last one, and that's what we'd lovingly call the pull the plug document. So when you want to withhold or withdraw life-sustaining treatment if in a permanently unconscious state. So those all make up the a general estate plan.
Question. Mm-hmm. And I might be putting the cart before the horse. But I've heard that you can contest a will, mm-hmm. even if it's 10 wills later, it hasn't changed. 10 copies later, it hasn't really changed that much. You can contest a will, but you cannot contest a trust.
I've heard the saying, again, not to be one-liners in here, but it's...
We like our one-liners, don't we?
I've heard the saying that it's harder to bust a trust than to contest a will.
Nice.
Okay.
But I say, to your point, you can add, like, no contest clauses mm-hmm. to wills. So some people will do that if they're anticipating some family member might be a little bit jumpy about getting a little bit more, and that can preclude them from receiving any will benefits, which is kind of neat. But, yeah, generally speaking, most people don't think to do that because they hope everything's going to be fine, and then that can ultimately lead to some headaches down the line. So, yeah, you're right.
Okay, that's interesting. Two different kinds of trusts that we deal with are what?
I'd say there are three. You want to hit those, Cameron? You want me to?
Yeah, the first one I think is, it's called a revocable trust, or some attorneys may call it a living trust. So that one, again, functions very similar to what we've discussed at this point. You can designate accounts or possessions to go into the trust, and then they get split up or dispersed in however you might describe and request it to. And at any point during your life, you can change what goes into the trust, the terms of the trust. You can create a new trust and burn the old one versus, cool, you can maybe go to the next one. There are some trusts you can't change once they're put in place.
Yep. So where Cameron started with the revocable, it's makes sense that the next one would be the irrevocable trust. So that's where the revocable trust is kind of an extension of yourself is a way to think about it. And irrevocable is literally setting up a separate entity. So the idea with that one is you're giving up control of those assets that you put into it. Generally, the benefit is removing those from your personal estate. Mm-hmm. So for some people, if you're trying to avoid estate taxes or maybe some legal considerations, there could be a benefit of having an irrevocable trust. I'd say for most people, maybe 90-odd% of people, with the disclaimer that I'm not an attorney, it probably doesn't make sense because it does add a lot of complexity to it that most people probably don't need. But that's the irrevocable piece. And then the third one being a testamentary trust. So of the three, that's the simplest version. It's not its own standalone document like the other two. It's actually part of your will, which for some people, some locations can still make sense. Like if your probate process isn't very complex or very expensive. But in other places, it can add some issues if you have a will-based trust.
I have never heard of that one before. And my mm-hmm. only experience with an irrevocable was changing it from a revocable to an irrevocable in the death benefit because of familial or potential familial issues.
Sure.
So yep. to protect someone from being accused of something, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the irrevocable is the one that was used.
Yeah,
I'm going to
set up
purpose.
Some pretty tall walls
right.
to protect
okay.
it.
Okay,
yeah.
So you're not just protecting the deceased, but you're protecting the point person, the executor.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Essentially the from having fingers pointed case. At that person.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. very clear, like, this is the word of law. This is what the document states.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that's a sign of parental love when you do something like that, honestly. Taking the onus off of the person that you've chosen to handle your affairs. Nobody can...
You can contest that, yeah.
Yeah, I can contest it. Okay. We've gotten into kind of the types of trust and their uses. We've talked about revocable, irrevocable. Tell me the last one you had again.
Testamentary.
Mm-hmm. That's not even something I saw in my research. That's interesting.
Don't ask me to spell it,
I actually want to know more about that one. Can you tell me any more about that one?
Yeah, so I would say the issue with it for some people is the fact it goes through the will. So anything that's going through the will is going through probate. So to Cameron's point, when he was laying out the revocable trust, anything that goes through probate, I'd say in most cases, it's going to be timely. So probate process is a timely process.
And hold on a second. I thought you could protect yourself, not to kind of juke out of picture here, but I thought you could protect your estate from going into probate if you do all the things the right way.
Yeah. So if you do all the things the right way.
Yeah. Okay. So assumably, if you've made an error and your estate ends up in probate.
Yeah. Okay. And that's kind of the idea with the testamentary trust is by design, it's going through probate. So that trust
always
is part of the will. So anything part of the will goes through probate. Just that's how it works.
Always.
Always. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So the idea is that adds an element of time to it. If you go that route, because you have to go through that probate process to get things ultimately to that trust, it's public as a function of it being through the will, and it may be costly. So again, it depends on the state. There are some states that are a lot more favorable than Ohio, for example, where a testamentary trust can make sense, but generally speaking, here it probably doesn't. But I'd say you still have all the control pieces of the other trusts. It just has to go through that probate level first.
Give me a vignette or a scenario where somebody...
A what?
A little vignette.
I'm from Newark.
Give me a contextual visual, a little story that... where you can explain what that might look like to somebody like me who's visual.
Oh, God.
So why would you need it?
It's a podcast.
Why would you need it? I'll look at Cameron.
So hang on. So why might you need a testamentary trust? Yeah, is that? Right. So the idea is maybe you live in a state. The two that I'm aware of just kind of offhand is, again, not an estate attorney, but Pennsylvania, New Jersey, for example, from what I've experienced is they have generally more relaxed, straightforward probate processes. So the idea is they might not need something as complex as a standalone trust or revocable trust in this case. Rather, you can just have everything you pass, everything just goes through the will naturally by way of passing. And then it's kind of streamlined in certain states. So then it just passes out to the beneficiary, or it has those control aspects. So maybe it's time-based or age-based. But I think that the scenario is just maybe you live in a state where something simple is more appropriate than having that standalone document and updating ownership and updating beneficiaries that some people might just not do anyway.
You're talking about the will or the trust?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's not a fun story, but, you know, it's just, yeah, I don't know how to...
Well, you know, when you're talking, I'm visualizing it, so that helps give me some context. My every person brain, thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
Tax advantages of using trust. So how could a trust help somebody with their taxes, I guess is my first question. Is that even possible?
With a normal revocable trust or a living trust, not really. Just because from a tax or a money perspective, nothing really happens when you put it in a trust. You just like when you update your beneficiaries on your retirement account or life insurance, you're doing the same thing. You're just designating that beneficiary to be the trust. And after that, life goes on. There might be a few scenarios where there could be some very specialized flavors of trusts that involve charity or gifting, things like that, that could have tax implications. I'm sure you're on the edge of your seat thinking of those, but just from what we've talked about the vast majority of people get living trusts, there aren't really any big tax advantages of, you know, tax consequences of having that in place.
Yeah.
Retirement accounts?
No. So the one that I'll add is on the irrevocable trust side. So the idea is that you're giving up control.
Yeah.
Primarily the purpose is to avoid estate taxes at death. So if you have a large enough estate, an irrevocable trust may make sense for you. So the idea is by shifting it to that new entity, you could save 40%, I believe, is the estate tax rate right now over, I think it's $26-27 million. So we're talking our high roller listeners kind of thing. But then that irrevocable trust can save you tens, hundreds, millions of dollars. So that can absolutely make sense.
So what happens when somebody creates, let's say, takes a an IRA account or a traditional account and puts it in a trust in someone's name.
Yeah, so it'd have to stay in the name of an individual. So those have to be owned by a person. You can't move that into a trust. But you can list a beneficiary as the trust or trust as the beneficiary. And the idea is it generally still passes per the language of that trust. It just comes down to how that trust is written. Will there be any additional tax implications to that? But it's just whether or not does it make sense to go to an individual directly as beneficiary, or do you still need those handcuffs?
So if you have a large family, that might be the way to do it.
Yeah, that's generally what we'll see.
Is that instead of like a regular beneficiary? So if you've got a Roth IRA account that you're bennying over to somebody, does it make sense to add a trust to it?
Yeah, so review with your attorney will be the the lead in there, but it can. It absolutely can. Again, it depends a lot on where you are. Some attorneys say list the people directly. Other attorneys, they may say, yeah, just list the trust as the primary beneficiary. Some may say list the spouse first, then the benefit or the trust as the secondary. So I've not seen a one-size-fits-all, so that's why you definitely need to review with the estate attorney.
I guess on that note, with putting the trust as the beneficiary on a retirement account, a bank account, life insurance, you name it, one thing we notice a lot of folks maybe neglect is actually putting the trust as the beneficiary on those accounts. Mm-hmm. You might go through the process of spending a good amount of money on putting a trust into place, and you think you're all done. Well, unfortunately, the part you might neglect is you need to put things into the trust, and that involves going online and signing your retirement plan, your bank account, and actually writing in transfer on death, beneficiary, and putting the trust as those designations, and that's how you fund your trust. Otherwise, you just spent a couple $1,000s on a piece of paper.
Just bear with me for a second. I'm having a bit of a blonde moment
here. We're bearing.
Yeah. So let's say I have 6 accounts, mm-hmm. and I have 3 children, and I have a trust set up, mm-hmm. and I want each of those 6 accounts to go to specific people. Mm-hmm. Why not just beneficiary those accounts over outside of the trust? Is it because I want to control how they spend the money or when they get it?
It's the when they get it. That's absolutely okay. Right. So if you want to create control, then having that trust as the beneficiary is the only way you're going to do that.
And spouses can't access that in the death of the beneficiary or what?
So, yeah, they wouldn't be able to access. I guess here it depends.
Did I just?
No, I'll paint a picture, though. I'll do my best to illustrate.
We're working through it.
We're there.
We'll wait. Cue the Jeopardy music.
Yeah. Ooh. I'm sure we can play that in post, right? So the idea is, again, paint a picture. So, again, we'll figure it out. We'll do a parody. So, 90% of the trusts I see have something broken down along the lines of you receive 25% of the principal of the trust, so whatever the value of the trust is. Let's just say it's $1 million for an easy round number. 25% is $250,000. So you receive 25% at age 25. You receive 50% at age 30. So if you have $750,000, you receive $375,000 at that age 30. And then the remainder at age 35. So to your point, if you pass and you have your assets listed where the beneficiary is the trust, then if your beneficiaries are younger than age 25, 30, or 35, and they haven't received that full principal balance yet, then there is something that's basically protecting it from any spouse or creditors or anyone, because it's held in that trust.
I forgot about the creditors.
Piece.
Okay.
Yeah. But if they're over age 35 in this scenario, they get all of that principal outright. There's no more control aspect of the trust. So at that point, it comes into their account. They're probably going to deposit into a joint bank account or whatever. They're going to commingle those funds. There's really no way to back that out at that point. There's no way to create that differentiation. So that's just a marital asset at that point. So it just comes down to the terms of the trust. Mm-hmm. But if that's the breakdown, there's a kind of the ages, it could be fine or it could not be. That's why we want to revisit often.
Okay, kind of bouncing back to taxation here for a second. Mm-hmm. If someone has an account let's say a Roth IRA account that's through a trust mm-hmm. and beneficiaried over to them, and they want to cash in that account, do they pay taxes on that cash?
It would generally follow how the account is taxed normally. So your scenario of a Roth IRA, since a Roth IRA is not the money on a distribution, it's not taxed to start with, you wouldn't get taxed on it as the beneficiary. If you had a traditional IRA or a pre-tax 401k or another one's escaping me, but if it's something that's pre-tax, if you had to pay pre-tax on it, your beneficiaries do as well.
Okay. What about for college expenses? Is that exempt? Are the taxes not required?
Yeah. So any income or principal distributions on just like general money, so Roth IRA being aside, that there would be taxes paid at the beneficiary level. So you're receiving income from the trust, or
even for college
principal
expenses.
Distribution, correct?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Asset protection and trust, the relationship between these. So, and I'm reading, so forgive me. This is outside of my lane. I want to talk about how trusts can protect assets from creditors, lawsuits, and other risks. I know we kind of just touched on that. So how does that happen? How do you protect yourself from risk?
Yeah, so there's kind of two stages or two levels for this. So there's protecting yourself, and then there's protecting your beneficiaries. So on the yourself aspect, since the testamentary trust and the revocable trust are just extensions of yourself, right? There's no asset protection. There's no creditor protection there. But in your revocable trust, could. Again, as long as it's properly set up, properly separated from yourself, there's no weird aspect where you still have control over it because you have to give that up, then there could be certainly some considerations there, some benefit there. At the beneficiary level, that was what we were talking about before, are the controls that are in place sufficient to protect the beneficiary? So mm-hmm. if it's age-based, are they able to access all of the principal, or are they limited to that? Any of that limitation is held up in that trust, and that's protected from those pieces.
This might be a question for an attorney, but can you put provisions such as this money can only be used for X in the trust itself, or is that sort of a will and last testament thing? And again, that might be an attorney
you
question.
You can probably put any, like, I know you can include something like a value statement with it, I think is kind of what you're getting at. Like, these are my values, how I would expect you to.
So, last will. So, sort of the letter of instruction or something?
More of a letter of instruction, mm-hmm. yeah. Less so an actual legal document. I mean, you probably could put that as a consideration within a trust. I think you can do almost anything within a trust. You get a lot of creativity, a lot of flexibility with it. But I don't know specifically and say, like, hey, you have to spend it this way.
Do you guys, have you ever, you know, you deal with clients every day, so I'm sure this comes up. Is there anything that comes to mind in your experience that we're using a trust made a massive difference on the risk management side of things for somebody? Without giving client names or, you know, even your own personal situation?
I think the one I can think of was just a client who has family history. I don't know to what extent, but family history of, unfortunately, divorce. And so they wanted to have something set up to where the kids could be protected if, unfortunately, history were to repeat itself.
So second marriage, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's probably pretty common.
Yeah. Well, even just if, you know, if I'm the beneficiary of a trust, mm-hmm. and I go through a divorce, mm-hmm. Would all of what I am entitled to in the trust, would that be protected from being split? Mm-hmm. And to Cole's point, what would be split would be the extent of what I have access to. Mm-hmm. So if I only have access to it based on my age, or, you know, how long, you know, the trustee or the trust owner has been deceased, maybe I only have access to half of it. Mm-hmm. So the half of it would be protected generally, and the other half that I have access to could be at risk to be split up in that mm-hmm. scenario. So that was a case where otherwise the client, the beneficiary would have received 100% of the funds, and mm-hmm. the whole account would have been at risk of, if that were to be the case of a divorce.
We talked about trusts avoiding using trust to avoid probate a little bit. Can we address that a little deeper, or have we covered all those bases?
I think we covered it, but just to kind of summarize it, and this is getting into Cameron's point really about funding the trust, so having proper beneficiary designations, proper ownership for your assets to incorporate the trust. As long as you do it right. Sorry, that's my wife calling. She's the only person that has... She's the only person that can actually make my phone ring.
Hi, Alice.
Right? As long as you have proper beneficiary designations, proper asset ownership, then you've funded that trust. And then the idea then is it's going through the trust versus going through the will. And that's key. So by doing that, then you should avoid probate. Again, as long as you've done that for everyone, you have to be really diligent, because anything that falls through the cracks, and that's the story you hear all the time. I know you have your own. Yep. That can add months or years.
2 years.
To that probate process. It can be unbelievably stressful if even just one piece is missed.
The best way to make it as smooth as possible is to work with an attorney. But
yeah,
even
100%.
Then, and I can attest to this, I worked with a phenomenal attorney and an attorney team. But the attorney team isn't necessarily going to comb through and backtrack all of your efforts to updating beneficiary information and transfer on death information on your accounts. So that starts with the individual making sure that all the details are met in the documents. So if you've got a checking or savings account, making sure you have a TOD set up or a transfer on death set up.
Yes.
I mean, in my case, and I've talked about this before, my father came into my home and I had to become his caregiver. And he was a successful engineer at one time in his life. He had a pension. And we immediately started... He was divorced, so we immediately started combing through his accounts to make sure that all the beneficiary information was updated and had his ex-wife removed and all that good stuff. Everything was done properly. I had a great example in all of you guys listening and paying attention and listening to the radio show at the time that we had going, and I learned a lot. And upon his passing... Everything had remained out of probate. There was really nothing left to the estate. It was not, you know, not like there was anything left. But somehow an annuity was buried in his pension that I did not know about when I updated the power of attorney information through his company, and the company rep never bothered to tell me that it was in existence, and it was beneficiaried over to his ex-wife. And
it
was
for,
I think it was for $5,000 or $7,000. Like, it was just a, you know, very small amount. It threw the whole estate into probate for 2 years. Mm-hmm. I had to pay tens of thousands of dollars in attorney's fees
for $7,000.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's somebody who's, I consider myself savvy and knowledgeable, and I'm living in a universe of people who are genius at this, and the wealth of knowledge that I receive from them. So, man, just comb through and make sure to ask the right questions. Talk to the HR people. Make sure that you're getting all the details taken care of before you assume anything.
Yeah,
it's amazing how.
I think that's a great point, though, because like work related benefits, probably one of the easier ones just to forget.
Mm-hmm.
It's like retirement plans you think about because you see those a little bit more often. Your bank account, you see those probably every day, so you can think about updating those. But like even just a small life insurance, like a $10,000 policy that you have through work. That's something that can easily slip through the cracks.
Yeah, he didn't remember it. You know, of course, it was inside the annuity was buried in the pension somehow. I don't know how that even works, but it was not
Couldn't
fun. It was not fun. Which, of course, on the emotional side, delays not just the utilitarian aspect of getting through an estate, but you know, your kids are pitted against each other. Everybody's, you know, fighting. It was a nightmare. Be diligent. Get the professionals on deck. Are there any other pitfalls that people should be aware of on the financial planning side of a trust that we haven't talked about? Any question I have not asked that really kind of comes to mind?
I think just to your point earlier, to your point earlier, if there are job transitions or life transitions, whatever that might look like, you move, get a new house, new life insurance, just be on top of if you have a trust in place. Getting that updated to fund correctly through the trust, however your attorney suggested it be funded, because that's typically a pitfall or, unfortunately, like you said, an event of divorce. On top of just probably getting a new estate plan done anyways, getting that updated so we're not giving ex-spouses or other ex-family members funds from our estate.
Right.
Yeah. Not, on my end, I would add just definitely review regularly. It is often we see an estate plan from 10, 15, 20 years ago, untouched, not thought about since your first kid was born kind of thing. So the idea is life changes. Your kids will change. They'll become more mature or in some cases maybe less mature.
Yep.
So to be able to ride those waves and say, okay, well, this is what I'm seeing. This is what I need to account for and be flexible is probably the most important thing you can do from an estate planning perspective.
And to piggyback on that, one of the big pieces of a trust in particular is nominating a trustee. If you haven't looked at your trust in 10 years, we've run into a lot of scenarios where you may not even know the trustee, or they might not be living, or they might be someone you don't trust anymore. So not just regularly reviewing the goals of the trust, but the responsibility, who is getting the responsibility.
And a trustee is a person.
Correct.
Is it an attorney or is it a person, like a point person?
Attorneys are people, Tracy. Well, I know sometimes they don't act like it or talk like it, but they're people.
Just joking.
No, of course. No, so it can be an attorney. Some people have that trust with an attorney, or maybe they don't trust their family where putting it with a professional feels like the best option.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a friend, a parent. You can list a kid as a trustee. Alternatively, there are trust companies, usually like an arm of a bank, where you can lean on them instead. And they're going to have their fees tied to whatever assets they're managing and whatever the roles they're performing. But if you can't think of a person that you'd be comfortable with, there are entities that can also step into that role for you.
Great tip. We hope you found today's topic helpful, and we're here if you'd like to research your own personal situation and need a little bit of help. We offer a complimentary consultation. Give us a call. We're glad you tuned in. We hope you'll come back. We are Managing to Be Wealthy.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.